Okay. Continuing here. Okay, there's one thing that came up very nice in this conversation with Maharaj. It's very important. Is the whole Vedic culture, you know, is the essence is the chanting of the holy name. Mm-hmm. So, whatever will bring about increase in that chanting of the holy name, that is accepted. Whatever won't, that is rejected. So that is Vedic culture. So now, if you can just sit down and chant Hare Krishna 24 hours a day, not worrying about where you stay, what you eat, and this and that, and you can just live under a tree and wander around, then one doesn't need any more support than that. Mm-hmm. One can't do that, then he takes support of the Pancharatrik system, like that, of the rules and regulations, so that his life is regulated, so he can chant Hare Krishna properly. And if that is also found not to be enough, then he takes support of the details of the Varnashram system that deal with the Varnas and Ashrams. But the whole idea is that one can't sit and chant all the time because one is, you know, has, you know, some anxiety. Okay, so since you have anxiety about that, you want to deal in that area so the mind will be peaceful so that you can and engage that in Krishna's service. But then it's Krishna's made the material world. He's given the rules and regulations how the material world works. So if you follow him, you'll get the best result, and it's the best way to please Krishna. You know, because then you're sure that I'm using this in Krishna's service. Like, otherwise, how do you know how you use a marriage in Krishna's service? Right? Other than Krishna says these are the rules that you follow. So by following those rules, you know this is what pleases Krishna. Mm-hmm. Like that. Mm-hmm. Then you can say, now I'm engaging the marriage in Krishna's service. I have those attachments. I'm engaging them in the Lord's service. And that way, then I'll be able to chant Hare Krishna better. But if one gets sidelined by this and chanting the holy name isn't the thrust, then you're not actually dealing with Daiva Varnashram. Then you're dealing with Asuric Varnashram. Because then, okay, we're at this point, we have no money, so we want to develop money, that's better. You know? In other words, the process becomes vertical rather than horizontal. It means vertical, meaning that materially I've stepped up, so it's better. Mm-hmm. So the position of the Vaishya is better than the Shudra. The Shudra is, I engage my talents of the mind in the Lord's service. Like that. The Vaishya is, I engage my talents of economic development in Krishna's service. The Kshatriya is, I engage my talents of organizing society so that people can be peaceful and protected so that they can engage in Krishna's service. And the Brahman is I train the others in how to perform Krishna's service, and I see that the Kshatriyas, that they are performing their duties properly so that the education and the application is able to be performed. Like that. So it's simply what service they're doing for Krishna. And then along with that, then they should be following the sadhana of devotional service and chanting Hare Krishna. That should be the main thrust. So if then in just organization means there has to be some hierarchy on the material platform of organization, but it's not nothing to do with the spiritual platform. Material platform is you have the individual, but things don't really happen without economics. You know, you can't expand things greatly. Therefore, the Vaishyas then has that position above the Shudra. And one man may be making a lot of money, but still someone has to make this, protect the country so that you can make the money. So he's better. And then better than that's the knowledge, because then you know what you're doing. So therefore the Brahman is therefore respected for that, just for their aspect within that. But as far as the devotional goes, it doesn't have anything to do with anything, that the Brahman is more respectable than the Kshatriya in that. It's simply that Krishna, you have to deal with the material energy. Krishna's given the system how to deal. You follow Krishna's system. That's the service. I'm respecting the Brahman because that is Krishna's way of doing it. And I understand that position for getting this done is better. Now, the quality of the service, the quality of the devotion which the service is done, that is the real thing. That determines who's higher and lower on the transcendental platform. But on the managerial platform, then you'll say, yes, Brahman is higher than Kshatriya is higher than Vaishnava.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes those points.
Oh.
That, society on the Paramahansa stage. They're not dealing. They're not dealing in that level. Then he's free from that. Who's higher? Who's lower? Says, but if he's dealing within the system as a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, then he has to respect the rules of the system.
You have to.
And exactly what you're saying, how on one level, if he's a Brahmin, or if he's a Vaishya, then he respects Kshatriyas and Brahmins as superior, although he may be a pure devotee, more advanced than them.
Yeah, yeah.
And they will reciprocate with him.
Yeah.
That's exactly what.
You know. Oh yeah, that's very good. Well, I mean, you can see a very nice example with Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan. They're cowherds, you know, people, but they're all, you know, pure unalloyed devotees. Not even just pure devotees, pure unalloyed devotees. But they're respecting Kamsa, who's a demon, as the king.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So when you're dealing on the material, when you're moving the material energy, you have to follow the rules of the material energy. Like that. If you don't want to follow the rules, then you have to be a Paramahamsa. You couldn't care less if somebody passes urine on your head. It doesn't matter. It's Brahman. There's no difference between the urine and, you know, anything else, because it's all Krishna's energy. It's all Brahman. And whether you eat, don't eat, you know, sleep, don't eat, it doesn't matter. So one's not on that platform. One deals with facility. One has to follow Krishna's rules of the facility. You know? And otherwise, then it's cheating, because it's you're dealing with Krishna's energy, but you don't want to work with the energy how Krishna says it should be worked with.
You want to have your bread buttered on both sides.
So
I'm a devotee, so I don't have to follow the rules, but at the same time,
I want all the rules,
but I want all the facility.
All the facility. Yeah. So it's just like if you want artha, that's no problem. Then you have to follow dharma. But the point is unless that dharma or artha or kama, like that, or the is enhancing your chanting, it's no use to it. That's the ultimate thing. That's what becomes so confusing about the process. Is we'll talk about the process, how you must follow it, so wonderful, important, nice, this, that. But if it's not for Krishna, it's useless. You know, it'll just be, so devotees get thrown off by this, because, you know, Prabhupada sometimes sticks so heavily against, but they're applying so much for, and they'll say it's contradictory. It's not contradictory. As long as it's being used for Krishna's service, that's the best. If it's not being used for Krishna's service, it's useless. Now we have to engage in Krishna's service, and we have to engage the body. So what option does that leave us? Just following the system according to how Krishna gives us. It doesn't give us another system. We don't have. I mean, well, there's no other option. You know, really. Okay, so that was the essence of this.
Just one more point, because this also applies, like, just as there's the Bhagavad culture, then there's a Vedic culture, and then if you're going to be involved in material life, whatever, eating, sleeping, defending, mating, then you have to follow the rules of that. Then also, if you're living in Western society or in any society, there are also state laws.
And
these also have to be followed.
Yeah, they have to be followed. But it doesn't mean, because the thing is the culture is maintained. Just like we're following Vedic culture, and the Madhvas are following Vedic culture. But the internal culture, we're following the Bhagavad. They're not. They're following the Pancharatra. Like that. It has the same element, because the Bhagavad is the life of everything. Every activity of the Bhagavad is the life. So they are Bhagavats, but you'll see the externals on. So their culture will take one form, though they follow the rule. You know, so it's a matter of everybody follows their own culture, but follows the rules. You know, it's just like someone's, you know, in America and they're from Italian background, they still dress how they like to dress, you know, wear their slick clothes and slick shoes, you know, and comb their hair and all that kind of stuff, and eat their pasta, you know, and just around the corner on the next block, Then there's a Chinese guy, you know, and he dresses like the Chinese like to dress, and this, but he also stops at the red lights and goes when it's green and doesn't steal and all that. And he goes home and he eats his, you know, rice with his chopsticks, like that, you know, and, you know, respects his mother and all these kind of things, you know. So it's, they follow their culture, though, the rules are followed. So the Bhagavat principle of chanting the holy name and everything is to remember Krishna, never to forget him, that's the essence. You know, from there, then you'll put the essence on the Bhagavat, if you're on that platform, or on the Pancharatrik, or on the Vedic, like that, externally. But internally, that always has to be, the holy name has to be being chanted. That has to be, the reason I am getting married is because as a brahmachari, the mind keeps wandering. The mind shouldn't wander. You know, it wanders all over the universe. Well, this girl looks nice, and that one looks nice, and this one looks nice. So you get married, and then the mind is fixed on one girl, right? So then the mind should be extracted. Then the mind can chant, right? So the only reason we're doing that is that. And since we're in it now, if it goes pleasant, then it gives more opportunity to discuss about Krishna and do things in relationship to Krishna and do all our activities for Krishna. If we're at home and we're fighting like cats and dogs, then it makes it very difficult to remember Krishna and to engage the activities in Krishna's service. Right? So then that is there. Therefore, you should follow it nicely. At the same time, as from following it nicely, it's very pleasant. From the Dharma comes the Artha and the Kama. So therefore, then the same literature that's encouraged you to follow this will also say it's a deep, dark well, nonsense, this, that, you know, cutting it to shreds. Because one may get overcome by the you know, material happiness from following it. Therefore, this balance. So there, we take the middle. We're following, but we stay in the middle. You know, then we... That was that was the point we were making the other day in the Bhagavatam class, is that the scriptures have to talk heavy like that, because if you're actually following the Vedic culture, it'll be nice, you'll forget. I mean, the demigods forget. The demigods are following nicely the Vedic culture, everything's taken care of, and it's just the way, you know, many of the grihasthas would like to see it, you know. All the facilities, everything wonderful, no fighting, you know, no nonsense, everything's just wonderful, and all that. But they forget about Krishna. And they only remember him when some big calamity comes. When a big demon walks in and chucks them out, then they remember Krishna. Otherwise, you think they're remembering Krishna when they're sitting there in, what's that place? At Trikuti Mountain and Nandankana, drinking their intoxication and sitting with their good-looking girls. Are they remembering Krishna at that moment? No, they're not at all. No question. It's only when they're reminded of their duty or some calamity happens, then. So therefore, the pious person must be reminded. And the pious person does not mind. The pious person knows, yes, I am very attached, I am very this, that. The impious mind, hey, what is this? Why you always get on a case? Why this? Why that? That's the impious mind. The pious mind, you can go to Indians and tell them this material world is this, and, you know, grihastha life is this, and kata, and they'll all sit there and go, yes, you're right. You know? Like that, you know, what to do? What can we do? You know, Swamiji, tell us, what can we do? You know? You have to give them something very simple that they can do. Oh, chant Hare Krishna, and read a little Gita with the family, and come visit the temple when you can. Oh, yes, yes. You know, and they'll take that seriously. They'll do. And then, you know, sometime later, then they can go to another step. Like that. Therefore, Prabhupada wanted that the thrust is the holy name, not that they just get caught up in the piety of the Vedic culture. Vedic culture is a tool, how do you say, an assistant to help us chant. Like that. It's an assistant to help us chant. We need to study like that. So the brahmachari, then he goes to the school and then he studies like that. But that's so he understands the philosophy. He's trained in the culture and in the sadhana so that he can chant nicely. It just goes nicely. Like you see during the festival, then the schedules are all upside down. They have programs, you know, up until, you know, late into the evening. and that, and the kids go to bed late, they're not able to get up in the morning for Mangal Arati, the schedule's all upside down, so basically they get up, take their bath, you know, chant a little bit, and then go into the kitchen, and this and that, and then, and we see that their service attitude, they're fixed in their mind, the sadhana, everything just goes down badly,
mm-hmm.
badly.
Mm-hmm.
Then as soon as everything's over and everyone's rested a little bit, then immediately go back in to start up the classes, start up everything again. And then you see, great, you know, they've got, you know, by, you know, 7 in the morning, they've got 10 rounds done, and they've already been to Mangal Arati, they've done the yajna, they've been to their mantra class, they're going to the kitchen to cut the sabji, and everything works very, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Mm-hmm. Because without the support of the sadhana, like that, then, and without the Vedic thing of the brahmachari doing menial service, they can't chant properly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had basically during the whole day almost free, like that. Especially after the festival, when all the guests left, we didn't have the heaviness in the kitchen as we did during there.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not getting the rounds done. But like today, just do the thing. Immediately, rounds are getting done, things are happening. So without the support of the Pancharatrik and the Vedic, generally you'll find most living entities can't just survive and dynamically increase their devotion with only purely the Bhagavad. Because Bhagavad means you don't care about it. You just chant, the Lord's there, he's a devotee, the body is his, he wants to take care, he will. If he doesn't, he doesn't. And you don't care because you're on the transcendental platform. You know? So what comes to eat, you eat it. What doesn't come, it doesn't. Like that. And if you're a bit of a preacher, you go and spend enough time at a grihastha's house for long enough time it takes for them to cook a pizza. Then like that, then you speak a little philosophy and then move on. You know? Isn't that? That's how the modern context of the Tridandi Bhikshu, he just moves from one house to the other long enough just for them to.
What do the modern Mayavadi sannyasis say when they go for their pizza bhikshu? They say, make me one with everything.
Yes, make me one with everything. Yes. Yes. Heavy on the olive. Heavy on the cheese essence.
Okay. Where does, like, the highest stage of devotee is when he's just sitting doing bhajan?
It's not that's the how you say, personally the highest stage. That is the topmost of the, how you say. It's the highest stage means he has no material desire, and he has taste in devotional service. So he's attached to that, or he's absorbed in that. So those are the highest stages. He's actually getting that reciprocation with Krishna, or developing his love for Krishna. But so that's for his own. That's the highest platform. For his own, that's the highest platform. But the point comes is that there's higher than your own. And that's what pleases Krishna. So that one becomes a devotee of Krishna, that pleases Krishna very much. But that more important than that, than one's own liberation, is the right hand.
Yeah, I remembered it as I was holding it.
The what do you call it? Yeah, keep that over there. It's a good one. You can even do it one-handed. Just don't curve it back too much. It goes on here,
right.
Just like that. So then, how do you say?
Highest.
Yeah. So highest is that what pleases Krishna? Like that. So what pleases Krishna is helping others. You know, you always see that. You see, like when you have these conclusive verses of how to attain perfection, and it's said in one verse, or, you know, one or two verses, you always see it contains compassionate or kind or friendly with other living entities. It always has that in there. You know, in the Gita, in the Bhagavatam, you know, they all talk about it. Prahlad talks about it. I think Narad Muni talks about it. I mean, they all talk about it, because that's the natural stage. is that you have done, so now you do this for Krishna. So that's there. That's why the ghosti nandi is considered higher.
Mm.
The realization may be, you know, or their level, yeah, whatever, their devotional platform may be comparable, but that intimacy is deeper,
mm-hmm.
a compassion for others. Because that's what Krishna is wanting. That's why he comes here. He's created the material world, the facility here, to that all living entities will eventually be serving him in the spiritual realm. So those who are, you know, temporarily misguided, then they can come to the material world and perform activities, and the idea being that those activities should be in line with the devotional path. And then when sincere, in other words, you follow like the shadow of the Vedic of the real Vedic culture, the spiritual culture, which we know here is the Vedic culture.
Mm-hmm.
But the real Vedic culture is that which is all centered around Krishna. You know, Krishna-centered, that is the real Vedic culture. So those rules and regulations that help us go from the position of conditioning we're in to the transcendental platform, that is the real Vedic culture.
Mm.
Like that. So that is the instruction of the acharyas and the bona fide literatures that they give. So it's almost being support. So the Vedic culture on its own, devotees will say, it's not applicable. But that means one is not understanding its purpose. Its purpose is to chant Hare Krishna. So those things that help us chant Hare Krishna, then they're done. And if you understand how they work, how they chant Hare Krishna, help us, then that's done. It's done. But if one doesn't, one just takes it as a rule that one must follow, then it doesn't help. You know, I mean, it's better than not following at all, but ultimately, you know, the culture itself, if it's not used for Krishna, is also material. It's also material.
That Ghosti Anandi, the higher Ghosti Anandi, or that stage of bhajan, is that Nishkam Karma? And then
no, it's beyond that.
Beyond
that. Means Nishkam Karma ends basically with Asakti.
Mm-hmm.
Bhava is another category because how do you say? You could say, yeah, it's not. It means basically when one hasn't started the process seriously of anartha nivritti,
mm-hmm.
when one comes to the point of, see, anarthas are going by just performing the process. But there's two stages of those going. One is just by the grace of the holy name, the heart is being purified. You know? That is being purified. So those things are going away from the heart, just without understanding it. It's just going. You take prasad, it's going. You're chanting the holy names. Millions of lifetimes of things are going. But these are all reactions. And all the subsequent desires. Just like, I have a desire to eat. That's the root desire, right? And that desire to eat comes from hunger. And that comes from the attachment to the body, right? Now from the desire to eat, then it's what I want to eat. Oh, I want to eat something salty. Okay, now within salty, do I want to eat a meal or a snack? Okay, snacks. So what kind of snacks? Bengali snacks, South Indian snacks, Gujarati snacks, Western snacks. Then within that, then which one? You understand? So it's just unlimitedly going. And even you get down to, okay, we want Gujarati snacks and we want kanvi. So now within that, now, you know, a little bit more dhanyapata, a little less, a little bit more mustard, a little less, a little more salt, a little more chili, this and that. Then within that, the chili, which kind of chili, which kind of coconut, which kind, you understand? It just keeps going, you know, how finely the coconut, it's chopped, how, it just keeps going, you know. And then, okay, then that's perfect. Then what's the environment I want it in? You know, I don't want to just eat it out on the road. I want to, you know, eat it private. Now in private, now in private, in my own place, someone else's place, just in the natural place. You know, then, you know, you understand? It's just, see? It just unlimitedly goes. And it's all just because I want to eat. And why that's there? Because I'm attached to the body. Right? So now, all those kind of desires, those are just being burned off by the chanting and all that. But that will go, because that's just from being the conditioned nature. But the root one, the desire to eat or the attachment to body, that's not going to go. That will go by the process of chanting Hare Krishna, but it's not going to go until you recognize it. Mm-hmm. Right? Because we got into this world because we made the point is why Krishna should be the enjoyer, why not me? And so we're only going to get out of the material world when we also make that same, we reverse that last final point. It means we're going the path backwards. Mm-hmm. You know? But now instead of we're going from Krishna to hell by engaging in all the Vedic and, you know, non-Vedic activities for ourselves. So now we're going to reverse it by doing them for Krishna.
Madhurya Karambini gives 5 stages. Avidya, Ahankara, Raga, Dvesha, Abhinivesha. Ignorance, based on ignorance, then you get ignorance, I am the enjoyer, whatever. Uh-huh. Then you get Ahankara, false ego. Then comes attachment, Raga. Then comes Dvesha, sufferings, because I'm attached, therefore I suffer.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Dvesha, Abhinivesha means fear of death.
Fear, yeah.
So if you reverse it, like you're saying, you get Vidya, then the Ahankara is dissolved.
Yeah, yeah.
Then
the
attachment goes.
Yeah.
And then when the attachment goes, then the suffering goes.
Yeah, because it's peaceful.
Yeah. And then there's no
fear. There's no fear of death, no fear of our relationship with Krishna. Because fear comes that I'm going to lose something that I'm attached to. Mm. If we're attached to Krishna and nothing here, then there's nothing that can create fear. Mm. That's a very, very good point. Mm. You understand? Very nice. So you're using that. So that means the Kanista basically means below Nishta Bhakti. Mm-hmm. Right? That means the beginning, the lower stages without the higher stages of Nishta and beyond. The Shraddha, Sarusanga, Bhajana, Kriya. These three are performed by the Kanista. And this means this Anishta Bhakti. Also, the Nartha Nivriti, the Nartas are being going away, but the first half of it is basically unconscious. You know, we're just trying to follow, but we're not consciously seeing the difficulties of our own attachments and conditioned nature. Then the Nartha Nivriti gets very seriously. We can say we're on the platform of Nartha Nivriti. When we consciously make a commitment to not be in Maya. Mm-hmm. So then that's the fourth stage, war with Maya. Mm-hmm. You know? So then in that, that's, you know, gets pretty wilder. So that's the top of the, that's like the top level of the Kanista. You know? That's like a well situated, that's an Uttam Kanista. You know? He's like well situated. Mm-hmm. Then, because now he realized where he's going. So this is the junction between Sakam and we'll just turn it around. Sakam and Nishkam, Karma Yoga. Because before he's performing the activities before himself, then he'll give the result to Krishna. Mm. But when the anartas start to go, then it's like I'm doing this for Krishna. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Krishna's activity. Krishna's this. Krishna's that. And so, what's getting in the way of me doing it for Krishna? That's the anartas. You know, the serious anartas. Then, when one gets to the next stage, then he's like starts to become steady. He makes a determination, but it doesn't quite work. And this, he's like on the Kanista Madhyam. Mm-hmm. Then the next stage where you get into the Ranga Tarangini, that's like the Madhyam. How you say it gets even more, more complicated. The Kanista. Yeah. You take Kanista as the overall, then within that Kanista Madhyam Uttam. Mm-hmm. And within that Uttam there would be the stages of Uttam. Mm-hmm. So then within the Nishta, then Nishta you'd have to have three. You know, the disturbing stages, the middle stages, and the nishta is the lowest level of the madhyam.
Mm-hmm.
So within the madhyam, madhyam is like he's following nicely and that he's getting results. Now he has to be careful that he doesn't get overcome by that.
Mm-hmm.
Then when he makes that determination to be overcome, then he's coming to the higher levels of nishta. And then the beginning stages of ruchi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because nadanam najanam nasundarim, that's starting to come. So when he can say that, then that's the pure madhyam.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a madhyam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it means he's ruchi is in the middle, and
right.
he's the middle of that.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like that. Then he starts to get attached to Krishna. Like that. There he's attached to the activities of Krishna. But asakti means he's attached to Krishna himself.
Is that uttam madhyam?
Yeah, madhyam that would be uttam? The uttam madhyam. The asakti is uttam madhyam.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that is all the realm of nishkam karma. You know? Then you go into bhava, and bhava basically has its levels.
Mm-hmm.
Bhava is the, how you say, because it's neither sadhana nor prema, so it's nishkam karma. So it fits with what you're engaging now as the yoga process, the advanced yoga process, yoga rudha.
Mm-hmm.
That yoga ruruksu is, yeah, right? Or yoga rudha is the higher, right? Yoga Ruruksu is the lower. So Yoga Ruruksu is taken care of by the Nishkam Karma Yoga. Because in the yoga system, the Sangha Yoga, the first six levels are all for that. You have to perform Nishkam Karma Yoga anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore the asana, yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, what am I missing something? Yama, niyama. Oh, dharana, yeah. Yama, niyama, asana, pratyahara, dharana. No. Yama, niyama, asana, pranayam, pratyahara, dharana. Those six are all within the realm of nishkam karma. Because you're performing the activities to get to the actual platform. So you still have to perform your duties. They'll still be taking their bath three times a day and doing all their different duties. Only when they get to the platform of dhyan, after dharana, they fix the mind where they can meditate, and then they're ready to just do that full time. Then they go into the dhyan, where they put the Lord as the meditation and the chanting of the holy name. Then they can give up all the activities, because then they just sit in one place. They don't take their bath. They don't do anything anymore. They don't do any asanas. They don't do any breathing exercise. Nothing. All that, they don't need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So on the platform of bhava, one is not required to do, because you're Brahma Bhuta. So all the conditioned nature is dissolved, doesn't exist. But we haven't developed love for Krishna. We're in the middle.
So bhava is equal to Brahma Bhuta?
Bhava and Brahma Bhuta are synonymous. Liberation is synonymous. Yoga Rudha is synonymous.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So therefore we see karma, jnana, and yoga. So the emphasis in engaging karma in the Lord's service, but in an attached way, is the kanista.
Mm.
You know, and that's vaidhi sadhana and all that, where that's the emphasis. And then the madhyama, that is the nishkam karma, where the emphasis, you're still performing the karma, but the emphasis is on the jnana,
right.
Understanding how it's, what's the workings,
right.
Like that. And then the how do you say? Something I was talking about before.
Yoga.
Yeah, and then when you get to and that will be following according to Vaidhi or according to Raganuga.
Mm.
Like that, doesn't matter. Like that, depending upon one's realization and all that. Then bhava, then that is Yoga Rudha. And that's where you're engaging specifically the yoga in the Lord's service.
Mm-hmm.
That aspect, Dhyana Yoga, you know, the sixth chapter of Dhyana Yoga, is that you're engaging that. After Krishna's explained very nicely the relationship karma and jnana, then he gets a little bit into the detail of that there. Then you understand karma, jnana, and yoga in the first six chapters of Gita. Then after that, then the next six he gets into bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
explaining that bhakti, the process, him himself is a person, therefore a universal form, all the different, how he's entered, how he's dealing, the relationships. Then he goes in the last, then concentrating on the jnana side of it. So that's understood. So how to perform your karma yoga so that you actually becomes nishkam karma. So that takes one through that. So the platform of bhava, then you get that, how do you say? Yeah, then you're able to meditate upon the Lord. That's the meaning of Surup Siddhi, is that in meditation you're in the Lord's pastimes, in your spiritual form. But you haven't developed prema yet. You have attachment for Krishna, and you have, and that attachment is, it has developed into a rati. So it's very, it's more than a sakti, you know. It's like a bud now of prema. But now it's very, you know, because the emotional, the ecstatic emotions start to manifest. All these different things start to come. You know, listen, nayanam glada suru dharaya baranam gad garuru daya gira. So all these things have started to come like that. So that's that stage. It's in between. Then when that meditation is complete, then the Lord reveals himself. Then you get to see the Lord, and you not just from a distance. Now, that's the inspiration. You've heard nicely, and then the inspiration. Then you fall completely in love with Krishna. Then now you're out of this system. Now you're on the platform of prema. At this point, then generally one won't fall like that. So you've made your conscious choice. So the thing is that choice has to be made. So Narta Nivriti, this is, you had to make your choice to become a devotee. So now you have to make your choice, you know, to practice properly, then make your choice to accept the guru and follow, then make your choice to get rid of the anartas, you know, then make your choice to try to become fixed, you know, and put your concentration on chanting the holy name, developing a taste for attachment to Krishna. That means these choices must be made. So that's the automatic, means it'll come with time. But one should be aware of what's happening. Otherwise, one may do things that are against the system. You know, one sees anartas, but one doesn't care for it because, oh, it's automatic. No, it's automatic by chanting. Now you start to see your anartas. Now do something about it. Not that, oh, I don't care about it. You know, because we just chant Hare Krishna. No, we chant Hare Krishna, and it'll make you aware that you don't deal properly with, you're offensive to devotees, you don't have the proper faith in the name, you're not surrendering to Guru properly, you know, you're not dealing with the Shastras properly, you know, you have material attachments like that, you have your own concepts of the devotional process, you know, like this. And so the holy name, and by association, the process automatically makes you aware of those. Now, what are you going to do about it? Then you do something positive, then you go to the next step. You don't, then you'll remain there or go down. You can't remain in one place, either going up or down. So just then that thing has come up. So the process is clearing off all that, but that choice must be made. Therefore, you'll see is even an advanced devotee, he may have gotten rid of millions and millions of lifetimes of nonsense desires, but still that desire, I am hungry, is still there. And if you don't remove that, then what's the next step? Well, what will I eat? You know, and then it just starts all over again. So sometimes devotees ask, how can an advanced devotee fall down? How can someone like, you know what I'm saying? Egaro Mahajans, how can they fall down? Like that, you know, if they were pure devotees, how could they fall down? But the point is their choices are many times on a different platform than ours. So it's because of advancement, but they weren't careful. You know, they got caught up in Ranga Tarangini or something there, and then that root desire, they don't get rid of, and it just grows again. Because if you're hungry, you have thinking, you have feeling and willing. When it comes up in the mind thinking, you have to get rid of it. If not, it comes to feeling. And then from feeling, then willing. And then, okay, how are we going to fulfill this desire?
But what about when Krishna says, Kunteya prati janihi name bhakti pranasyati?
Because they're not lost. Because the devotional service is there, because that's real. So then they may get sidetracked for some time, and they're never lost. You know, Krishna takes care. They don't come under. Yamaraj is not going to come and collect them. Mm-hmm. They're going to have with their next birth and all that's going to be arranged with Krishna and the material energy directly. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go through Yamaraj.
What about if?
Means you don't accept those who accept God. God takes care. Those who don't accept, you know, or it's non-sapradayak. They don't really. Then Yamaraj takes care.
If they become like really offensive after,
then they become Naradamas. That means they had the chance for devotional service and they give it up. Therefore, Naradama is the lowest. Mm-hmm. Means who creates more trouble? Are you one of these, you know, spiffy three-piece suit guys that go around in five-star hotel, you know, corporate manager? Are they the lowest? Who makes more trouble? These big scientists, the Maya Pratijnanas, or big asuras who control whole countries and they're demoniac, they make much more trouble. Who's more gross is the mudha. Just gross sense gratifier, mm-hmm. just completely no brain. Mm-hmm. But those they're not all named the lowest. You would think they're the lowest, but they're not the lowest, mm-hmm. because none of them have come in contact with Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. Naradama means someone's come in contact with Krishna consciousness. Even in a slight way, and then they give it up. Therefore, they're the lowest.
Mm-hmm. Like Jagai Marai, no one is. It's the Tarashakshi Jagai Madhai.
Yeah,
Tarashakshi. Vina Hina Jata Chilo. And the example is Jagai Marai because they were Brahmins. Then
yeah.
They became very, very.
Yeah, and they broke every rule of the Manu Samhita. I mean, you really have to. I mean, you can imagine every rule they broke. Yeah.
Okay, what's the next one, Jagai? It says here. It says, but for him who begins study, the teacher always unwearingly must say, ho, recite. He shall leave off when the teacher says, let a stoppage take place. Okay, we'll just start studying when the teacher doesn't care. And when he says stop, we'll just keep going. Okay, tick that one off. Next. Let him always pronounce the syllable om at the beginning of the lesson. Okay, forget the om. Next.
You know, it's just, it just goes through. So it's why
there's one point you made in the beginning how if you don't, it's always there as a making a point and through all living entities. So now you go to the thoughts in the Skadachala Chaitanya, so he says twice, Satya, Satya, I promise that somebody who just chants Hare Krishna and criticizes no one, I'll take him back to Hare.
Yeah, so that's it. You just have to, don't criticize anybody. And if you don't do that, the other anarthas will go away. Oh, the other offenses. Because you offend devotees, and you'll generally see then one's faith in the shastra, faith in the guru, faith in the name, material desire starts, that goes down, material desire comes up. Everything comes from that. That's why there's so much emphasis put on that. That's why it said it's the worst. Mm. It's not the most abominable. The most abominable is the seventh. Because that's ungrateful, just louse, you know, low class, disgusting.
Sin on the strength of the heart.
Yeah, it's just this disgusting of disgusting. So in that way, it's the lowest, you know. The worst, though, is offending the Vaishnavas. Like that. Because you do that, and then Krishna just removes your taste. Because it opens up with this, that the what's that, Madhurya Kadambini, opens with a very strong this point. Very elaborate. It's the most described point in the book. Is just how the devotees are dear to the Lord, and how bhakti is independent from karma, gan, and yoga, and you're getting it through the devotees' bhakti, and that bhakti is coming through madhyamas, preachers. That's the whole point. The Uttamas aren't giving, the Kanistas aren't giving, the Madhyams are giving. Now, of course, the best is a Madhyam who's an Uttam, who's acting as a Madhyam, right? If not, then you get a Madhyam who's acting as a Madhyam. And if you can't find that, then you find a Kanista who's acting as a Madhyam, preaching and doing whatever he can. Those realizations not very good, great. But it comes through a Madhyam, not through anyone else. Right? Like like that. That's the point. You're sitting out on the street and some guy just walks along, never met the devotees before, comes up, hands you a book. He's doing madhyam service. He may be a bhakta that just joined yesterday. But because he's doing madhyam activities, then that beginning on the path starts. Because it comes through the madhyam. The madhyams are the conduit through which the flow of you know, devotional nectar. Can't think of all the Gaudiya superlatives, you know, like that. It's flowing. That's the flow of good fortune. Is that it's coming. It's coming through someone who's acting in the capacity of a madhyam. So Kanista acting at capacity, he can, something will flow. Madhyam acting in that capacity, a lot will flow. And Uttama acting in that capacity, it's a flood. You know? It's a flood.
And then why does Krishna, how can somebody control Krishna? In other words, if the devotee is able to give Krishna,
because he's doing what Krishna is doing, because that's the stage in the nine processes, then Shakyam is a madhyama, because he's friend of Krishna, right? Because he's doing Krishna, what is dear to Krishna, right? Means all the others, you're chanting Krishna's name, you're hearing about Krishna, you're serving Krishna, you're doing all these different things, you're in connection with Krishna, but Shakyam means you're going out and telling people others, training others. So Sakyam, so you've actually become Krishna's friend.
Bhaktosi me sakha cheti. Because you are my friend and my disciple. And rahasyam yatad uttamam. I'm telling you this highest secret. I'm revealing this secret unto you.
That's the... And then, admani vedanam. That's uttam. So the Sakyam means, so that's why the Uttams take great pleasure in coming to the platform, the Madhyams, and preaching. Going out and all the anxieties that go with the preaching mission, they're taking it. As long as the mission's going on, that's fine. You know? But if it's not, they don't take it. Like if building a big building will then increase the preaching, they'll do it. If it won't, they couldn't care less about a big building. You know? Like Rupa Goswami doesn't need to build a big building for his service. He writes books. He speaks. So someone else comes along. Who is it? Man Singh. Wasn't it? He says he'll build the building. So he says yes, because he's a king. He has wealth. He has people. It takes wealth and influence and people to build a building. So then that was his service to Krishna. You know? Rupa Goswami didn't even see it completed. Like that. I think Govindji was installed in the temple something like, I don't know, years, many years after Rupa Goswami had left.
Really?
Yeah, wasn't it? You know? Many years after.
Did Rupa Goswami design it?
I'm not sure. I'm sure he had something to do with it. I haven't seen anything else with that kind of design. Just in my own opinion, that's the most highly developed and refined piece of architecture on this planet. Like that. I don't think there's anything as wonderful as that. I haven't heard of anything. I haven't seen anything. I mean, there's a lot of nice stuff, but there's nothing like Govindji. And that's only 1/5 of what used to be there.
Right.
In the beginning, you're saying how it takes like you chant Hare Krishna, if you can do it, that's best. If you take some more help, you take Shatra Panchratri Dhanatvanasha. And then you're also explaining how to build like a temple, it's the duty of a king. So the Jesuits went to South America and everybody said they're just animals, you know, they're just fit to be slaughtered and used as slaves. And they started preaching to these people. They wanted to get them to become Christians. So they couldn't get them to pray, so they started using music. And all the people started joining all the Indians because of the music, but then they couldn't get them to be dynamic because they're such active people, and they build this huge place up. They build this huge church in the middle of the forest, in the rainforest. And then the people are still not engaged, so they started doing economy. And like in that village they're living, it's a Varnashram community, that community, they made more business than in the entire Europe. So they're like, Europe is like, they're all animals, everything, and then the Pope heard about this place and they sent one of his ambassadors to see this place. So this guy was going up the river in the Amazon, and then he came to this place, saw this huge temple, and saw these naked Indians, and they're singing the Magnificat of Bach. And he was like, wow! And the Jesuit just came and explained to him, so this is how we get the people to worship God. There's no other way. There's no other way. You know, you're just wrapped in. They can't, they couldn't. Mm. Like a, they set up the whole Varnashram, they set up the whole business, they built a huge temple, they had the whole thing going. It's like everybody was getting, everything was in the middle, in like in the common use, everything, all well. And according to your service and your quality of service, you're getting means of livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like in a kind of degraded Varnashram. The whole Varnashram just set up. The whole thing was set up just so they can worship God. The whole thing was just like the richer than the whole European Empire and everything, like richer than the whole world, just so they can worship God.
Hmm.
Then the Europeans smash it all down.
And the Pope gave it to the Spanish and the Portuguese, and eventually they killed everybody, the Jesuits, they killed their own priests, everybody.
Why did they do that?
Politics. That's when, then after that, then half of the world was divided. Half was for the Portuguese and half for the Spanish. That's like Brazil was the cutoff point. So on this side of Southern America, they speak Spanish, but in Brazil they speak Portuguese. That was the place they cut their earth in half, half the Spanish and half the Portuguese.
Joy.
They,
as an
15
feet, set up the whole
thing, just so people can reach them.
It's amazing.
Okay. Very dynamic beginning to the.
I haven't even started the class.
Hasn't
yet.
Started yet.
This was just the introduction. Okay, then 69. Having performed the rite of initiation, the teacher must first instruct the pupil in the rules of personal purification, of conduct, of the fire worship, and of the twilight devotions. So here is how to personal purification, how to clean. He's clean, his clothes are clean, how he keeps his stuff is clean, where he lives is clean, his surroundings are clean, you know, and all these kind of things, you know, your achmans, and, you know, the gross and subtle, all these things.
Mm-hmm.
Then of conduct, how to properly behave. One is the brahmacharya, and how to just deal with others properly.
Mm-hmm.
Then of the fire worship, you know, how to perform the ritual, kalpa, like that, the deity worship, and all these kind of things. And of the twilight devotions, how to perform, this would be their japa. Because that was before the japa. In other words, this would be the Bhagavat. Twilight devotions would be the Bhagavat. Fire worship would be the Pancharatrik. The conduct would be the Vedic.
Mm-hmm.
And the personal purification, that's common to, you know, all of them. You know.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so the Vedic thing, it's the same principles. Just it comes down, because Bhagavat means you're interested in pure devotion.
Mm.
But this is meant so anybody can follow it,
mm.
even if they're not. But this is understood inside, right? Because the twilight devotion, the chanting of the Brahmagaita was their japa.
Mm.
That was their chanting of the holy name.
Mm.
So they always had to be chanting the holy name. And then they have to do their ritual. So
mm.
for us that comes through the medium of the Pancharatra,
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the conduct, that's the Vaishnava etiquette that generally we see just comes from the Vedic culture itself, because
mm-hmm.
that's reflected from the spiritual realm.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then personal purification, just ourselves, how we just, you know, just that we're clean, you know, cleanliness, and kind of like up to the human standard. Okay. 70. But a student who is about to begin the study of the Veda shall receive instruction after he has sipped water in accordance with the institutes of the sacred law, has made the Brahmanjali, has put on a clean dress and has brought his organs under due control. So before starting then the study, one must perform achman, you know, according to the proper method. Then he has to perform Brahmanjali, that means, you know, pranam, like that. In other words, some prayers have to be basically, you know, that mood must be right, because this is, the shastras are respectable, they're worshipable. Mm-hmm. The teacher is worshipable. That knowledge is being transferred, that process of transference of knowledge is respected. You know, so like that whole thing is respected.
Like Mangalacharya?
Yeah, like that. Some kind of a thing has to be there. That'll come up more in detail there. Mm-hmm. But in other words, respect to the teacher, respect to the shastras, everything. Then a clean dress means must be dressed properly, clean, and that it can't just come in some rags or something like that. And has brought his organs under due control. It means now he is focused on the class. His eyes aren't wandering here and there, or listening to something else, or he's thinking, oh, I'm really hungry, or, you know, he's tired, or, you know, stuff like that. It means that, or everything's in control, like that. And so he's now he's ready to study, like that. Otherwise, he's not. Even though he'll hear the lessons, mind will be here and there. So how does that happen? This comes by purity. Therefore, so much menial service and cleanliness and proper conduct, and all the, you know, the deity worship, the japa, all the everything must be performed. Then only one can have this mentality to study. Mm-hmm. So if we have that, then that is the real essence of accelerated learning. mm-hmm. Is that when you have that, then the mind just soaks it up like a sponge. As soon as you just bring knowledge in contact with it, just soaks it up. But if not, if you haven't had the advantages of these things where the mind and heart is pure, the desire for knowledge is there, then you have to create that. You have to create that. And that gives rise to modern systems of academics. So since you have children coming from backgrounds where they aren't necessarily well trained, it's going to take them time to be able to take full advantage according to the Vedic system, you know, by being purified. So in the meantime, you may have to use some of these techniques to generate the interest, like that, you know. And but at some point, you want to just go into just the Vedic, because that's the essence. It's complete with the culture. But as a starting point, one may have to use, like Krishna mentions in the 18th chapter, is that situation, serving Krishna according to the modes of goodness, that situation is the best. But even if it's according to passion, ignorance, if it's in relationship to Him, then, you know, it's a start. It's good. But one has to do it in relationship to Him. But one shouldn't leave it in that. One should progress. One should mature. You know, in the beginning, we may have all kinds of material desires. You know, we eat just because we're hungry, but later we eat as a service. You know, the body has to be maintained. We eat because it's Krishna's prasad. We honor the prasad rather than just eating. So in the beginning we can do that because it's in relation to Krishna. But as we become purified, then we have to raise the standard. And like that. So the brahmachari must have these, what do you call it? Means he must have these things. He must be pure himself. Means he must be respectful. He must be clean. You know, gross and subtly. He must have the senses controlled, like that. Then he can study. And you're only going to get those by the practice of devotion, the sadhana, like that. Devotion, the sadhana, the menial service. These will purify the heart. 71. At the beginning and at the end of a lesson in the Veda, he must always clasp both the feet of his teacher, and he must study, joining his hands. That is called the Brahmanjali, joining the palms for the sake of the Veda. The beginning and end of the lesson, always clasp both the feet of the teacher, and he must study, joining his hands. I love this English. At the beginning and end of the lesson, 71, this is something here, no. Beginning and end of the lesson in the Veda, he must always clasp both the feet of his teacher, and he must study, joining his hands. That is called Brahmanjali, joining the palms for the sake of the Veda. Oh, I think I understand here. Is this? I think it's a detail on Brahmanjali. The Brahmanjali is joining the palms for the sake of the Veda, so it seems to be both meaning the offering of the obeisances to the teacher, because the hands are joined,
mm-hmm.
and offering respects. I think that's like here. But why it's called Brahmanjali is that namaskar or pranam, you're doing it for, you're off, that mudra is there, but it's for a particular, you know, for offering prayers or just respects or like that. So Brahmanjali means that you're offering that the pranam mudra with the purpose of understanding, you know, the knowledge,
mm-hmm.
gaining from the teacher, respecting the knowledge. 72. With crossed hands, you must clasp the feet of the teacher and touch the left foot with his left hand and his right foot with his right hand. So that would be when you're offering obeisances. Means if the teacher is there, one can do. Then one will just touch like that. So that's the cross. No, not how far apart is somebody's feet? That far apart? How does somebody stand? Stand up.
That.
Yeah, but the feet are that far apart?
We understand that.
Yeah, but generally you'll find that others it's a little closer. Yeah. So that is it's nice, but when also it's a subtle thing. It means when they're there then you touch. When they're not there it's done by subtle by meditation. Right? So that means the hands are crossed, means this hand goes on top of that hand. That's crossed. You don't have to go like that. I've seen devotees do that far. You know, it's like I guess that's all right in martial arts, if the spiritual master's standing in the horse stance, like that. And if you're doing, that's if you're doing panchanga. But if you're doing the astanga, then you'll cross the thumbs. That's the tradition. Because, you know, the left toe is here, and the right toe is there. So, what's the distance about that far? Therefore, it's subtle like that. Because the point is that is formal. You're not going to stand. Just if you're standing there, and somebody's coming, you're going to move like this. No one's standing like this. You know, they may come, but when somebody goes to offer the obeisances, you're going to move your feet. Because you're stationary. If you're walking, then the feet will be up. You'll see. It's like that. You know? And generally, they're going to bend over and, you know, touch and, you know, tell them to get up. Things like that. So it all goes together. Is that disciple who does like that, although the spiritual master has to do the reciprocation of that. And that is, he will lift the disciple. Because you offer your obeisances, you can't actually get up until the spiritual master says you can get up. Like that. So the whole thing goes together. If we want to get into it, then you have to get into it. Like that. Says, but to him who is about to begin studying, the teacher, always unweary, must say, ho, recite. He shall leave off when the teacher says, let a stoppage take place. Now here is an aspect that we see here is the teacher always unwearied must say, because he's teaching generation after generation, so he can't get tired of the subject. You know? You must, like that, because you go deeper and deeper and more understanding. The more you teach, it's like is Sukadev gets realization by teaching it and Pariket by hearing it. So both are gaining from it.
Guru Maharaj told me that Prabhupada said there's 10 times more benefit giving class than hearing class.
That's why for us, we give class, that is the purification. So if that's understood, that is why, you know, newer devotees or this or that can sit and give a class. Now it's about who can sit on the Vyasa-san, this one, that one, but it's by doing that you get so much realization.
Mm-hmm.
That. Therefore, our process is we do it, and then we become qualified. Mm. Well, the material process is become qualified, and then after a long time, you're recognized, and you do it. So our system goes the other way. Mm. So then, unwearied must say, ho, recite. In other words, and the student doesn't start until the teacher tells him. Like that. It means the teacher comes in the class, it's quiet. And then when he says, okay, start the lesson, then it starts. And then when he says, let a stoppage take place, means, okay, that's it. Then that's when they stop. So they must be, how you say, in tune with the teacher. Must be like that. Then let him always pronounce the syllable Om at the beginning and end of a lesson in the Veda. For unless the syllable Om precedes the lesson, unless the syllable Om precedes, the lesson will slip away from him, right? And unless it follows, it'll fade away. And basically, is in another place is mentioning here. Yeah, it means in the beginning it won't be understood. If there's no transcendental sound vibration in the beginning of the lesson won't be understood. Hmm. You know, like that. It'll slip away. Means you can't grasp it. You can't grasp what's being taught. And unless it follows, it'll fade away. It means he may have caught it, but he won't remember it. It'll go away. Therefore, there must be, you know, something, chanting Om, some invocation, some kirtan, something must be there at the beginning to make the atmosphere favorable. And then at the end, then there's always some kirtan or some Hari Bol, Jai, you know, Hare Krishna. Like you see, probably say, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. You know, it's like there's always something at the end, like that, and then you'll retain, like that. So that's the point. So we see, you know, let's follow. We follow that. We do kirtan before we start. At the end, there's always something happening. Okay, seated on blades of kusa grass with their points to the east, purified by pavitras, blades of kusa grass, and sanctified by three suppressions of the breath, pranayama, he is worthy to pronounce the syllable Om. And as Lord Chaitanya pointed out, you know, he has to be wearing tilak. So basically it means that one is purified oneself. The one's purified in the dress, purified in his consciousness, then one can actually chant then the benefit gets. That's what the Om. That Hare Krishna is so wonderful, even without that, still one is benefited. You know, what is that? But the main point is one must be seated in a pure place, dressed pure. You know, he's, you know, all these aspects, he's controlling the senses. In other words, everything is pure. Then it's like, then he's ready to begin the lesson. Like that. Because the lesson begins with the kirtan. Did they blow the conch? Oh, okay. So then maybe we'll stop here. So now it gets into a description of Om and the Brahma Gayatri. So we'll continue with that tomorrow. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.